Welcome to the Whole Healing Hour. I'm your host, Jenny Storms, Cannabis RN.
Hello?
Thank you for joining the Whole Healing Hour with Jenny Storms, Cannabis RN. We're welcoming today Jeff Waters. Jeff, you're a patient of what's known as COPD. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Sure. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It incorporates several different lung diseases. Basically, a disease that limits or prohibits your lung function could fall into that category. Things such as emphysema, chronic bronchitis, lung scarring, those types of issues all fall under the blanket term of COPD. And COPD, basically, with Western medicine, traditional medicine, is told there's no cure. The best that the doctors tell you that they can do is try to slow down the progression of the disease and give you a bunch of pharmaceuticals to try to attempt that.
When did you find out that you had COPD?
I was originally diagnosed almost 9 years ago, but I believe that I had it before that. And for me, in my case, lung problems have plagued the men in my family my whole life. So it and when, actually whenever I was diagnosed with it 9 years ago, not like now. Now you see all the commercials on TV for the medications and about COPD. Back then, I had never even heard of it when I got diagnosed about it and didn't know what it was. And then until I went home and actually went home and looked it up on the internet because I was like, what is this? You know, the doctor didn't really tell me much. And so that's how I found out, and that's how I was diagnosed. And it progressed fairly quickly with me over the next 4 or 5 years after that.
You bring up a valid point that COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, was not well known. And now it's really out there in the media with a lot of prescription pharmaceutical recommendations for treatment. You went that route, correct?
I lived it. I went the whole pharmaceutical route. And one of the things I always like to say, and I've joked about, is that with my case and with pharmaceuticals and my doctors, it was, if I went in there and said, you know, that, you know, my sweat smelled funny or just something odd like that, they would have a pill for it, I'm sure. You know, they love to throw pills at you. And with COPD, that's some big money in those medicines. A lot of those medicines are very, very expensive. And the way they lure you in is, here's what they do. You go into the doctor, and they say, okay, let's start you out on this medicine. And they say, and by the way, we got a coupon for you. You can get your first prescription of this free. So go ahead and try it. But once you get on it, I think it's kind of like a placebo effect. You think that you feel better on it. And so the next month, you think, oh, I'm going to stick with this medicine. And then when you go to the pharmacy the next month and you find out the price of it, you know, the one inhaler sometimes could be $250, $300. And it just goes, the cycle goes and goes and goes. And it did with me. I would go back to the doctor and say, well, it's not working as well now. And then he would add another inhaler or another medicine, and I'm just ongoing. I mean, I got to the point where I look back on my records, and at one point I was on 22 different pharmaceutical medicines at one time.
When you say pharmaceutical medications, as an audience, are you talking about pharmaceutical pills and an inhaler?
I'm talking inhalers, pills, anything. I mean, all typical, not just, and the thing with me is I had other conditions as well besides COPD. So, like, I was on COPD inhalers, I was on depression medicine, I was on high cholesterol medicine, high blood pressure medicine, anxiety medicine. The list goes on and on.
How long does an inhaler typically last a COPD patient?
Usually the inhalers are for 30-day they usually last 30 days for the most part. Some of them may last a little longer, but most of the time, typically, you have an inhaler that's going to last you about 30, maybe 45 days at the max.
So talk to us as far as an audience with COPD. What is it like living with COPD to begin with, without treatment?
I can tell you in my experience, like I said, it progressed and it got worse. It started out with me where I was out of breath, I was simply out of breath, and then I was getting bronchitis a lot. And then they put me on the first inhaler. And then, like I said, that one started where I didn't think I was helping as much. I went back and added more. And with me over that period of time of about 4 years, four and a half years, it progressed to the point where I was at the lowest point in my life. I was 36 years old and dragging an oxygen cord around my house, and my wife volunteering to shave me and help me in the shower, things in that matter. And I was depressed, I was overweight, I was on all that pharmaceutical medicine, and it was living hell is what it was.
Well, I know our host, Jenny Storms, is on the line, and Jenny is obviously an RN. She is a nurse. She's actually originally from California and then lived on the East Coast with her son, Jackson Storms. and who is a medical marijuana patient now, legally in the state of Colorado. And so she probably has some pretty specific questions to ask regarding COPD and possibly how becoming a medical marijuana patient changed your life.
Okay. Betty.
Hi, Jeff. It's a pleasure to have you today, and thank you for being on. COPD, that's a tough diagnosis. When you first were diagnosed, how fast or slow was the progression of that disease and to the point in which you're discussing and describing the number of pharmaceutical drugs that they had you on?
In my case, again, my progression happened pretty, within the first year after I was diagnosed, it wasn't so bad. I would say after the first year, the next 2 to 3 years, it really went crazy. And I think too, also the environment, the atmosphere where you live plays a part in that too. At that time, I was living in big cities in Texas, so I was living in Dallas and Irving, and in the areas we lived in, I mean, it was literally there's not a lot of trees, and there's not a lot of greenery, and it's just a lot of commercial development, and probably smog and different things. But I know that the difference between whenever I was living in Texas, even to when I was even in such bad shape, whenever I moved from Texas back to Oklahoma, I felt a little bit better just based on the air quality of where I moved to. But my progression was, it was pretty quickly. I would say, like I said, again, over about a 4.5 year time frame after I was diagnosed, I went from working full time, being a healthy young man to driving oxygen around, being on pharmaceuticals, couldn't leave my house unless I made sure I had my rescue inhaler on me at all times, that type of thing.
Pretty quickly. And how long did you start, towards the end of that 4 to 5 years, start looking into cannabis? And at that point when you started looking into cannabis, how long did it take you to decide to use cannabis as a treatment?
Well, for me, what happened with me is 2 years ago, I had a severe allergic reaction to lisinopril. It's a blood pressure medicine. I had high blood pressure. And I'd been taking that medicine for 3 or 4 years prior to having that incident. But I ended up in the hospital. My lungs were in such bad shape. I also had staph pneumonia. So they put me into a coma. They didn't think I was going to make it. I was in there for 28 days. They were getting ready to release me, and you know, I knew the doctors and were talking to him and that type of thing. The doctors that were treating me then were younger guys, fresh out of medical school from the other side of the world. And these guys looked at me and looked at the medicines I was taking, and they said, "You need to get off a lot of these medicines." And some of these medicines that you're taking for your COPD increase your risk for pneumonia. And if you get pneumonia again, you probably won't make it. So they sent me home, actually, with scripts. And the scripts were for vitamins and pharmaceutical natural grade, but, more natural type of way to go. And when I got home, that got me thinking. I thought, there's got to be another way to do this. And because this isn't working, and I want to live, you know. And so I started searching on the internet, and I found out about Cannabisil. And I couldn't find anything documented or anybody who had COPD and used it, but I saw so many encouraging people's stories with cancer and other major diseases that they were beating. And I thought, if they can beat cancer, you know, why can't we beat COPD? So that put it in my mind. And it wasn't just Cannabisil. I had researched a lot of different things before I made up my mind on which way I wanted to try and go. I felt comfortable with Cannabisil, and then my next problem came as, you know, I went to try to find it, and I'm in Oklahoma, and nobody knew what it was, and so that put me at a roadblock. So then I went back to social media. I found one lady who claimed that she had healed her COPD with Cannabisil. And I started talking to her, and that was enough for me. I just found one person who gave me hope and gave me the courage, and I really didn't care about it being illegal at that point. I just had the hope and the belief. And I found a man on the internet, my original caretaker, Ronnie Smith, a.k.a. Roland A. Doobie, he's passed on. But I found him on Facebook, and he claimed he could send oil to anybody in the U.S., didn't care. And so I hit him up. I said, okay, I'm in Oklahoma. It's probably the most illegal state in the country. You know, if you can send it here, let's do it. So he got me started on it. And I think I was probably one of his first, very few probably patients that he treated with COPD. And we didn't know what to spec, and it wasn't a protocol. I just started my own protocol and started working at it. And as I went, and first I didn't do anything different. I just took oil. But as I started feeling better from the oil, I started changing my diet. I started exercising. I started doing a lot of different things in my lifestyle in my own health. And I really took back my health. And I've had amazing results. I'm off all pharmaceutical. I don't even take Tylenol anymore. I'm scared to death of pharmaceutical. The only thing I use are cannabis and natural products, and that's it. And I was 190 pounds. I'm 5'5", 5'6". I was a little overweight, quite a bit overweight. I'm 145 pounds now. I no longer need blood pressure medicine. I'm in the best shape of my life. And cannabis oil, diet, and exercise is what's done it for me.
That's absolutely amazing. The delivery method that you take oil, you said you started off with taking the oil and eating the oil with your diet, with your food, taking it. I'm assuming it was the RS oil or a butter or some form of edible and a concentrate. Did you ever consider anything else or ever try anything else for your COPD? And the reason why I ask, I know many people with COPD. I've approached my own family members with COPD and, you know, hey, what about cannabis? And the first answer I always get is, well, you know, I can't smoke it. And I never intended for them to smoke, but like you said, there is absolutely no evidence, no help out there for COPD. So what different types did you try, and what do you find to be most effective for you if you did try something other than edible forms of cannabis?
Well, like I said, when I first started, I just did oil, and that's all I had access to at that time. There wasn't, and that's the problem, I guess. And it's gotten better now, but that's a problem for patients, especially in the legal states. They don't have access to all that. But I started out with oil, and then as I started healing, and actually, I started a group on Facebook. As my group grew, and I learned I needed to find contacts for other patients to be able to get their medicine. And then I became, you know, finding other people who could send me and we could work with them so I could get other things to try. So I could tell you I've tried probably just about everything cannabis related, I think, for the most part. I don't know if there's a lot of anything I haven't tried. I'm sure there probably is, but I've tried edibles. Edibles, tincture, all the other things besides oil are all tools to put in your belt when you're fighting a disease, a major disease. But for me, the main thing is high THC cannabis oil for COPD, either a sativa or a sativa indica mix. It's very specific for COPD. That's what works for COPD. Indica work as well, but the problem with indica is a lot of patients, especially new patients who've never had cannabis before, they don't have any tolerance, and indica, as we know, tends to make you sleepy, which is good, like a cancer patient who needs to rest and their body needs to heal. COPD patients, they need that exercise. They need to be moving around. And a lot of times, in my case and other COPD patients, is we get so down and depressed with our disease, and the feeling of breathlessness and being out of breath scares us, so we tend to not exercise, and that's the worst thing we can do. So a sativa oil, but if you live in a place where you have access to get edibles, tincture. And I even have a lot of patients who vape, and I vaped a couple of times. It's not something I normally do, The times that I tried it and I really liked it, it was with the Volcano, and those things are very high priced, so it's not something I could probably do regularly. I don't know if it'd be a smooth or another machine. I have no idea, but I've edibles, tincture, just anything that you can get your hands on that has cannabis related and safely made is a tool to put in your belt.
Absolutely, and I think you speak very wisely in regards to the nature and the disease progression of COPD. I mean, anyone who's had difficulty breathing, and you have many different factors here between the pneumonia, the COPD, the having to breathe is so difficult. Trying to get yourself to catch your breath usually makes you breathe faster, which gets less oxygen to the brain, which just makes things so much more exhausting. It's easier just to sit still and do nothing, which in turn increases exhaustion. And it's this downward spiral. And I think it's amazing. And I commend you for breaking the cycle, because it's not easy, and looking for something different that's going to help you.
It's not just physical also. It's also, it really plays with you mentally, because, just doing certain things that you would normally do in life that require some exertion from you, you tend to get anxiety over it, and then it becomes so bad that you don't even want to do that anymore. You just quit doing that, whatever that particular task was. You just give up, and also the other part of it is, we feel secluded as COPD patients, and we tend to shut ourselves off from the rest of the world, because with COPD, you can't look at that person. A lot of COPD patients look perfectly healthy. You have no idea by looking at them something's wrong with them. And so that's one stigma that we have. The other is, a lot of people think that, hey, you got COPD because you smoke. You did it to yourself. And that's another thing that's not true. There's a gene called alpha-1. If you have that gene, you're more predisposed to get COPD. It's genetics. It comes from also, you can have it from being around asbestos. You can have it from being, in a toxic environment. So I've known people who have never smoked.
Or living in a big city in Texas.
What's that?
Yeah, that's. Living in a big city in Texas, those kind of factors are going to impact your lung function. And you're right, it is not just a self-inflicted smoking-related disease.
Right. And the great thing is, the one thing I can say now about seeing it on TV and stuff more that we didn't see 10 years ago is that at least now it raises awareness. And people, I don't know if everybody is aware that's listening, but it's the number 3 killer in the United States now, and it's moving up on the list. So it's right up there with cancer. It's an epidemic in our generation that we should and we need to face and figure out a way to deal with it. And in my opinion, and not just in my life, but seeing other patients, and not just patients I've helped in other states and other places, patients I've literally, in my own city, see them running around now without their oxygen, faces all rosy and looking great. And I just, this, for me, cannabis oil and cannabis medical marijuana needs to be an option for a patient to have as a choice, no matter where you live, period, in the United States.
Agreed. Zip code should not be the determinant as to who or what has access to healing, to health. One thing that everybody in all states can do, though, is eat the healthy diet. And how did you go about looking? I mean, I know you started with the medical-grade vitamin supplements, but how did you go about deciding whether you're going to go natural or organic? And did you just switch over completely just all of a sudden? And how quickly did you start seeing the benefits from eating a healthier diet?
I didn't use a lot of supplements. I kept it pretty simple, and the reason why I kept it simple is because I hadn't been working in a long time. I didn't have a lot of money. We were relying on just my wife's income, so I didn't have the money to go out there and try every supplement. I had a lot of people that would send me some to try, and some that I could afford, I'd get and try. And I just went with what worked with me. And really, for me, I thought the least amount of stuff that I can put in my body, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did, and I still do, just a basic daily supplement, vitamin. I do vitamin C religiously, vitamin D and D3. I do a B12. And I think that's it off the top of my head. I may have another one or two stash in there that I've used, but I don't remember off the top of my head. Now, that being said, if I get sick, or if I feel like I'm getting sick, one of the best things I found to really knock off a cold or any illness coming on, if you catch it early enough, it's called SSK9 drops. And you can find it on the internet on Amazon. And
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again? What's it called?
Yeah. SSK9 drops. I believe it was
Make
sure I'm saying the right thing, but I'm pretty sure.
It's Sally K before, like, kite, and the number 9.
It's TriQuench SSKI, I believe.
K-I, okay. SSKI.
And what you do, and a good friend of mine, who was passed on, but is also, I found through social media, who was big into doing natural options. He sent me this to try, and I'll be darned if it doesn't work every time. Every time, and not just me, my whole family uses it. If we feel like we're having a cold coming on, you just put about 9 or 10 drops of this in your drink. Do it, whatever you're drinking. I like to put it in an orange juice or something like that. And then you do it 2 or 3 times a day for a day or two, and I'll be darned if it doesn't clear everything up. Well, of course, I have to backtrack. Well, I take that. Also, I'm drinking lots of vitamin C all day long and taking vitamin C religiously whenever I get sick. But that's the types of things I try. The other thing I like is last year I got the flu. I actually got it twice. And I used cod eye silver. And between that and the drops and the vitamins and the vitamin C, I did not even have to go to the doctor last year, and I had the flu twice. I actually, at that time, I was back to work, and I missed 2 days of work where everybody around me who was having it was off for a week or more.
Wow. That's amazing. And I'm actually looking up this SSKI right now, and it looks like it's a potassium iodine oral solution. Those are the chemical names. The SSKI is the chemical name for it. And that's absolutely amazing, but you're using nature, just like you're using the cannabis plant, to actually treat some of these viruses that have become so resistant to the antibiotics and the antivirals out there.
Yeah, I can tell you that I think it was, I have to go back and look at my dates, but probably a year ago, I thought I felt some symptoms coming on. I had some tightness in my shoulders and chest, and I thought maybe I was having a heart attack. I was a little worried about it. Pretty anti-hospital, anti-doctor, but I'm not stupid, you know. So I did go to the hospital to get it checked out, and they did a full battery of workup on me. And of course, because I'm where I'm at, you know, I couldn't come out and tell them
mm-hmm.
what my choice of treatment was, but I told them, you know, I don't do pharmaceutical, I do all natural. And when these doctors came back, they said, you look, you know, your labs are amazing, everything's amazing. Keep doing whatever you're doing. And
awesome.
And that, to me, is a testament because, I mean, the medical doctors who previously I'd seen in the past, the same doctors who told me I had lung scarring and it was getting worse are now telling me it's all clear. Your blood, your lungs, everything is perfect. You're a perfect health for a 43-year-old man. Keep doing what you're doing. And that's just a testament to living naturally, cleanly, and trying to avoid as much of the bad products and bad things out there. And I have to tell you, one of the things right now that I totally believe in our society is that we're being fed to get sick. If you think, I don't
agreed.
Know if any of you guys have ever investigated this, but sugar, oh my gosh,
oh, yeah.
Sugar is a horrible thing. And if you go and look at the labels in everything in the store, 99% of the stuff you find in your supermarket has sugar or a form of sugar hidden in it somewhere in that label. And it's tearing up our kids. It's tearing up our bodies, our people. And That's why pharmaceutical is in such a big business that it is, because we're getting sicker and sicker by the stuff we eat, the stuff we breathe. We're not being taken care of by our government anymore.
No, and I agree, and I call it food-like products. You know, it's not real food. It's a chemical storm that we're disguising as food, and it starts as young as newborns. Think about it, preemies, born first day of life. What are they given? They're given a formula because mom can't breastfeed, or the child is too ill, needs to stay in that little, you know, incubator, you know, protective environment in the NICU. And these children, the first food that they get, the first nutrition they get, is formula. The first ingredient is high fructose corn syrup, which you and I know as sugar. You know, mm-hmm. And that's not a way to feed a developing brain.
You know, and I learned this because I've seen it in my own life, my family's life. I can tell you that I have a 16-year-old stepson, and he has seen the change in me. And just by him seeing my changes, this young man at 16 years old has pretty much given up soda pop for the most part. And every once in a while he may have a drink, but he does not drink it very often at all anymore. And that's, for me, I think that's great because he has a little bit in his mind now as a young generation coming up of what, and he's seen what these products did to me and what the pharmaceutical did to me. And actually, I'm kind of proud of the fact that because of everything that he saw me go through, he wants to go to college to be a nurse. And I think, you know, that's a wonderful thing. But for in my own family, you know, we've seen the difference and the change in our own environment, our own eating and things we do, and the changes that it's made in our body. And really, you know, another great thing about it is my family, I didn't push them and say, hey, you got to eat what I'm eating. You got to do this, you got to do this. I didn't do any of that. They just kind of started seeing what was happening to me and just kind of started following suit. And now we just kind of try to do as healthy as we can for the most part, you know.
What's it like to be a leader, not just with your own health, within your own family, but within the community, having people come to you and asking you for advice? What's it feel like? I mean, in the beginning, were you hesitant, scared? Again, you're in Oklahoma, appreciating that fact.
What happened, you know, with me, when I started getting healthy and started seeing that was working, I felt a moral obligation that I had to share my story and tell others. I mean, really, that's what it was. And I never intended for this to be, or for me to be in the position I am now, or what I'm doing now. Now I have a group of close to 4,000 members, people daily that message me. I have emails. And what I do now is I try to be kind of a liaison, you know, kind of a middleman, I guess you could say, to try to get the patients who need the medicine to somebody who can supply it to them. And I do that, and then also I counsel daily, you know, answer questions daily. And there's just so many people out there with COPD and so many people struggling. And when they see my story and they talk to me, it gives them hope. And that's, once they get that little bit of hope, and I get them to get on the medicine, and get them to start changing their habits. I see them, I mean, every day I get, in my group, there's a Treating COPD with Cannabis on Facebook. There's people that posting their success stories. You know, I mean, this is not once every little while, this is daily. And that's why I encourage everybody that I help and everybody I talk to, I encourage them to share, you know, my story, their story, with their doctors, with their friends, with everybody. And if they, I don't turn away anybody who wants my help, and I try to give freely with my time with that. And I encourage everybody, if they're in a legal state, network out in your area and find other cannabis advocates in that area. Contact your legislature and see what you can do to try to change and get medical marijuana at the very least in your state. Make calls, write letters, get active on Facebook. And one of the things I hear from a lot of patients is they're afraid. because they're in a legal state to say anything on Facebook or whatever. And I can tell you that I've been treating myself and treating others and helping people for about 3 years now, maybe a little over that, and maybe 4 years. And I'm very vocal. I'm in a legal state. I think everybody in my town probably knows who I am. And I've never single once had an incident with law enforcement. That being said, I'm a patient. I think everybody knows. For me, I don't sell directly oil to anybody. I don't have parties where a bunch of us come around and we do oil and all that. You know, I don't have traffic coming in and out. I'm strictly a patient. And so I think people see that and respect that and know that, and for me, you know, if anybody were to come and ask me, I've got stacks of medical records, I got pictures, I got a box of old pharmaceuticals sitting out in my garage. You know, you can come and inspect it anytime you want, and spend 15 minutes with me and my family, and I guarantee I'll change your mind about medical marijuana.
Absolutely, and it's amazing how us families, individuals, patients are the testament to how this is working. And I'm not sure if Amy shared with you, but I have a child who is on cannabis, been on cannabis since 2000. And I say the same thing, and I can tell you 100% of the time, come hang out with me for a day. I'll share with you the cannabis. You can see the change in my son, the seizure relief. And he now has, you know, a form of Parkinson at age 16. And the cannabis is just amazing to just treat his symptoms. And I totally agree. And I think that's amazing, but also important to set that down that distinction that you just did. I'm a patient. I'm an advocate. I'm here to share my story, but I don't have cannabis. I'm not going to ship it all over the United States to all these different people, because I'm sure you get a lot of requests like that from desperate people that are wanting to treat and have the success that you've had. So I think that's important.
I can tell you that I get a lot of patients. As a matter of fact, I've been busy the last couple of days, so I haven't been answering my email. When I checked this morning, I think there were 68 emails. And I don't care what state you're in the United States, and for that matter, in the UK, Australia, and South Africa. If you're anywhere in the United States or those countries and you need oil, if you email me, I will make sure I find you somebody that will get you correctly made, safe, natural IPHC sativa oil, period.
Now, have you ever had any oils that were done with, say, butane, a contaminant, or not properly cleansed if it was an alcohol base? And if you did, how did that affect your COPD or your health status?
I've had, like I said, obviously, I had to build a network with some other oil makers in other places, and I've dealt with a lot of different oil makers, to be honest with you. And here's one of the major things that I've encountered is that if you get oil that's made with ISO or NAPA or chemicals like that, not food grade alcohol, if you don't cook the alcohol, don't get it, get all the alcohol cooked off properly with those chemicals, it tends to have a problem within your, it can hurt your stomach and your digestive system. And I've seen literally patients who have gotten oil that was made with bad solvents where it wasn't cooked properly, who got sicker because of that. And we don't want to make patients who are sick already sicker with a new ailment. So I tend to stay away from that. I only like to stick with food grade alcohol. And that's just my personal opinion. Everybody has their own opinion. And I'm at the point now, there are a lot of people who want to argue the solvents and all that. And I really, I don't want to argue it. If you're using that solvent and it works for you and you're having great results, fabulous. Stick with it. But for me and my experience, food grade alcohol is the only way to go, because if food grade alcohol, at least, if you get somebody who doesn't get it cooked off all the way, and you can't cook it down yourself, at least the food-grade alcohol is not going to hurt you as in the other cases it will. So that's my – and the other things I come across is is where sometimes they'll either overcook it because they're in a hurry, And when I say overcook it, what I mean by that is you want the oil to be strong, thick, but you don't want it to be so thick that it comes, you can't hardly get it out of the syringe. And when it does come out, it's like a pencil lead. That's what I call overcooked, way overcooked.
Correct.
And I've had some that have, you know, undercooked it, so it came out what was too thin. And the problem with it being too thin is it's hard to get your right dose. So if it's thin and watery, how are you going to get, you know, pinhead on your tongue? It just squirts out. You know, so that's the issue with that. But those are the issues that I've seen come across for the most part with as far as different people and how they make oil. And it's all like overcook and undercook. Usually that's because it's somebody who's making a lot of oil and they're in a hurry to get that oil out to patients. It's not done on purpose, but that's the type of things that I see.
Absolutely. Now, with the overcooking, it is true that if you overcook THC, that it turns into CBN. Do you have any experience using CBN? And if so, how do you use it in treating the COPD?
I haven't. I mainly, I've tried CBD only oil made from an actual maker who made it at home, not from Bluebird or that crap online.
Correct.
But it didn't give me the relief I needed. I find that the high THC content seems to be a kicker as far as the healing goes. And I've always used, for the most part, high THC. Not for the most part. I can tell you I have always used high THC, that usually lab test around 67-68% THC, 5% CBD, and then you're miscellaneous after that.
Okay.
And that's pretty much what I've used.
Awesome.
And, you know, this has worked. So because it's worked, I haven't felt the need to go out and try other things. You know, this has gotten me so well, literally, that I'm doing things that I'm not believing I'm doing now, and that I wasn't even able to do at 36. So
that's awesome.
This works.
No, that's amazing. And I know with some disease processes that switching things up and changing things every, you know, couple of weeks, every couple of months is imperative to that. So it's good to know that with the COPD, what you experienced and what others are reporting back to you is that you can stay with the same therapy during a period of time and still get the same relief from that. And I think that's amazing to know. For example, myself with my child, who is nonverbal, there's a lot of guesswork, but I am finding I have to switch things up. You can't use the same dosing, the same strain, the same ratio every single week for weeks on end, months on end, years on end. It doesn't work. So I think that's an amazing take-home that we need to know with COPD and the high sativa THC is that you can stay on that same dose, which makes procuring a safe supplier much easier, as opposed to a parent of an epileptic child where we have to switch up a few more things. You know, I have to find more than one person with more than one plant.
Right.
And so I think that's a benefit.
Now, as I've said, I've used, you know, basically for the most part, a sativa or a sativa mix. Now, because I always stick to the same principle of what I use on my oil, which is high THC, made with 3-grade alcohol. Strains we can mix up and different things we can try. It doesn't always have to be one strain, and I believe in trying different strains and getting a broad spectrum of the plant to heal your body and to get the cannabinoids in your system. And so I've used different strains, but if I always stick to the same basic thing on my oil as far as high THC made with 3-grade alcohol. And then the patients, as far as patient-wise, once you get on that oil and you start taking that oil, you have to build up a little bit of tolerance to it. And it's not – you don't have to treat it COPD as aggressively as you do cancer. Like the protocol with cancer, with the gram a day and so on and so forth, I can tell you that probably – I can count on my hand in the last 4 years how many times I did a full gram in one day. It just never was necessary. And when I first started, to be honest with you, probably for the first 6 to 8 months that I was using oil, a gram would last me 30 to 45 days. So I took a small doses, built my tolerance, and as I started getting better, I started exercising, doing diet changes. And really, and that's one thing I need to stress, and I always tell everybody that if you're doing the oil, but you're not doing anything else differently in your life as far as diet, exercise, or lifestyle changes, then you're not going to probably have the best healing effect that you want to have from that oil. Is it not? Is it going to make you feel better? Are you going to have better from your symptoms? Yes, no matter, even if you just sit on your couch. But you're not going to get the healing that I have and others have unless you really change, you know, a lot of things in your life. It's not just the plant itself. It's not a magic, you know, plant, a magic pill that's going to change everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great medicine, but you've got to make other changes, not just with COPD, cancer, you name it, whatever major disease you have, you got to make changes and add cannabis with that.
Absolutely, and I think it's important, especially with the lungs, to get up and move, and that's going to prevent your pneumonia. It's going to prevent any complications. You're getting the airway up and moving. You're actually exercising your lungs as much as you're exercising your body. Super, super important to be able to do that.
And it's simple exercise, even. You know, people started asking me, what did you do when, you know, start exercising? One of the first things I was doing was I was just cleaning my house and doing chores and moving around, which I hadn't been able to do in a long time. And then once I started doing that, I started feeling better. I started walking and just simply walking. I'm not speed walking, nothing, just walking a block or so, you know. And as I started
to the mailbox,
getting more and more better. I went from walking, you know, a few blocks a day to walking 5 miles a day, where I even could jog some, you know. So the more that you can move and, like you're saying, get your lungs moving and exercise with COPD, the better off you're going to be. And even if you can't get up yet and move around, you can do chair exercises. You can do simple little things, breathing exercises even. You know, you can always do something. I could tell you this. One of the great things for me, like whenever I came out of my coma, they never gave me really much rehab or anything. I didn't have insurance. But my wife started handing me a flashlight, just a little flashlight that was sitting at the edge on my hospital table there, and would make me curl that. And that little flashlight, when I first started doing it, felt like it was 50 pounds. But
oh,
I kept
gosh.
At it. And yes. I tell everybody, you can even do that yourself. If you're sitting at your chair right now and you feel like you can't get up and exercise and move around, grab a glass, grab a can, grab something, and just curl that. Move it up and down with your arm for 15, 20 times. Do that several times a day. And then as you start building up some tolerance and start exercising, doing things like that, you'll see that you'll be able to do a little bit more each time, a little bit more each time. And by all means, if you're in an area where you have access to cannabis products and cannabis oil and you have COPD, you should definitely get your hands on them for sure.
With your Facebook group, is the title Treating COPD with Cannabis?
Is it harder?
No, is that the title of your group on Facebook, Treating COPD with Cannabis?
Yeah, Treating COPD with Cannabis is my Facebook group. And then I also have a webpage. I haven't did much with it yet because I'm not much of a webpage type of guy, I guess. But it's Treating COPD with Cannabis.com. And then I have my YouTube channel where I've got some videos that I put up there about treating COPD with cannabis. And I'll be doing more videos of that. And so I'm basically trying to find and hit every avenue I can to make sure I reach every COPD patient I can find to let them know there is an alternative to pharmaceutical, a better alternative to pharmaceutical, and you can have your life back. And so I'm YouTube, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, on the internet. So
are you going to start sharing these other people's stories that you are having? And these other stories, other people, will they have more comorbidities? Usually COPD comes with emphysema. A lot of COPD patients have cancer because they are smokers, and so they've got the cancers as well. And are you seeing success with them? It's probably going to be a little slower because you're treating more stuff. Dosing is going to be different. But are you going to be able to share all these stories of these people in your group on your different modalities?
I encourage people's stories, and I have tons of emails and stories. And one day, and actually I hadn't thought about it. You just sparked a new idea in me, I guess. I try to share those stories on Facebook, but now maybe I may think of doing something different, putting something different together with a bunch of stories. Now you've gotten me something to think about. Thank you.
Not a problem. You know, because I'd love to hear about the comorbidities. You know, I've got friends who have the COPD, the emphysema, the cancer. And like you said, when you first started this, there was nothing out there. And for the most part, there's probably still nothing out there. So I would love to follow those journeys and see those stories and be able to see the success. And from learning from others, how do we treat someone else and not just let them give up to carrying around an oxygen tank and all these pharmaceuticals?
I do
appreciate that.
Until I put something together like that, you're more than welcome. Anybody out there is more than welcome to request to join my group on Facebook.
Okay.
And
I probably will.
Of course, we do a thorough screening on who gets in and who gets out. But you can join the group and you can see the stories for yourself every day. This morning, I think I saw one on there. So until I get something put together, that's your way to see those stories.
You know what? I think I will join. I do have another question for you because you are in Oklahoma. I do hear through the grapevine that in Oklahoma, there's a lot of different stuff going on legislatively throughout the United States, but specifically Oklahoma. They have a petition for medical marijuana, again, coming up through voters and stuff like that. Do you think this is going to pass? Do you think this is the right answer for Oklahoma?
I do think it's going to pass. I'll tell you why I think it's going to pass, because I've been the group that you're talking about is Green the Vote. Our website is greenthevoteok.com, and on Facebook, Green the Vote. We are a group of patients. I'm a board member on this group. We're just a group of patients. We put together a patient-friendly petition. We filed it with the state and got approval from the state to start our petition drive October 1st. And we've done this on a shoestring budget of just donations and
awesome.
Very little money. We've done this. And everywhere I go, and I wear my treating COPD with cannabis shirt or my Green the Vote shirt, or I have a closet full of cannabis-related shirts and attire and hats and things. And everywhere I go, at least one or two people in every establishment I visit are for it. That tells me, and that's across this great state of Oklahoma, not just in my small area and community. That's where I traveled around. That tells me if I'm getting that much of a response everywhere I go, we've got the signatures. We only need basically 123,000 signatures. We're shooting for 180 to be safe. And we have, as I said, launching October 1st. We have the Oklahoma State and Tulsa State Fair coming up. We have football games coming up. We have the Christmas parade coming up. I mean, I think the opportunities for us to get those signatures are out there, and we're going to get them, and this is going to succeed.
Who's going to be able to sign this petition? Is it going to be only Oklahoma residents, registered voters within Oklahoma? What's the criteria, and who are you looking for signing this petition?
Yeah, it's strictly for registered voters in the state of Oklahoma. Because when you're doing a petition, it's a petition to get something on the ballot to vote for. So it has to be registered voters in the state of Oklahoma just for us to vote on. But again, if you haven't, that's another big thing I want to stress. If you're in the state of Oklahoma and you have not registered to vote, do it now. It's going to take you a couple weeks to get your card, and you can't sign a petition until you've actually gotten your card back from the state of Oklahoma. So that's very important that you do that now. And we will be doing this for 90 days, basically from October 1st to end of December, I think is what we're shooting at. I think we've got it. I'm actually really excited about it. I'm going to a meeting this afternoon in Muskogee, Oklahoma for Green the Vote. We've got chapters If we don't have a chapter in your area yet, holler at us, go to the website. We have a volunteer form on there. We need all the volunteers we can get. We need people to hold signs when, you know, when we're at events. We need people to be able to gather signatures. We just need faces surrounding us, smiling, waving at people, because that's what we do. We don't push people. We're not, you know, slamming and going running up on your door and forcing anything. We're smiling. We're happy. We want your vote. We want you to sign. And
amazing.
And this, I really feel that this for medical marijuana in Oklahoma, and I'm pretty excited about it. And for me to be a part of it, it's been amazing experience to literally walk in the state of Oklahoma, walk to the Capitol, and walk with a group of people and hand in that petition to the Secretary of State is just it's an amazing thing. And if anybody, any youth, anybody ever has a chance to participate in anything like that, I'll highly encourage it.
So what's going to happen? Let's say we get to December 31st, you get your 180,000, let's just go with even $200,000 or 200,000 signatures. What ballot, where does this end up? I'm assuming it's going to end up on a ballot somewhere. Is it going to be in the spring? Is it going to be in the fall? And is it full cannabis? I'm assuming it's not a CBD only. Is it going to, you know, what are you asking for in here as far as, like, methodologies, availability? I mean, what does it look like?
It's not a CBD only bill. Absolutely not. It is and I feel our bill is a little more progressive than some of the other states, actually, because our as in a lot of states, they put limits as far as you have to have this disease to be able to get a medical marijuana card. And our mm-hmm. bill, the way we've set it up, is if a physician will recommend you, no matter what it is, I don't care what your condition is, if your physician and you agree that that's the best thing for you and he'll recommend it, then you can get a medical marijuana card. It's set up for dispensaries, 25% of all the proceeds go back to schools. The other percentage of it goes to, I guess, the Department of Health and for things like addiction treatment centers and things of that matter. And it's if you go to greenthevoteok.com, the actual bill is up there, and anybody can read it and go through it. And is it perfect? It's probably not perfect, but this is it's a pretty darn good bill, and it's a first step, and that's what we need.
Amazing. I so appreciate you being on our show and sharing your story and doing the hard work you're doing in Oklahoma. You know, having been a refugee and moving to another state, I know how difficult it is. If you can get this passed, you are saving heartache and family breakups, you know, for people having to move. And I'm sure you've considered moving to Colorado. You're making a good change. I appreciate it.
Well, here's the reason why I haven't moved to another state. Again, as I said earlier, I have a 16-year-old stepson, and we've moved around. We've moved around Texas and different cities, and we've done a lot of moving around. And he's at a point now where he's happy at this town he's at. He's playing football. He has friends. He has a girlfriend. He's 16 years old, and he wants to graduate here. And I think I owe that to him. So I'm not moving. I'm not leaving the state of Oklahoma. So that being said, I've got to figure out ways to help me and other patients so we can still get healthy, even though we're being denied access to a safe plant. But that's my personal.
Sorry for the breeze. Okay. At this point, I want to say thank you again for coming. I really appreciate it. We can be found at the Millennium Grown website, which is www.millenniumgrown.com. You can watch all our shows and see our host bios and learn more about our guests. Again, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Welcome to the whole...